Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, theology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth. When we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour on this December the 28th on the West Coast, now December the 29th on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone. We'd also like to welcome those not just listening on BBSRadio.com, but also on Wind Talkers Radio Network and blogtalkradio.com around the world. We appreciate you carrying the show, and especially anyone in the U.S. military listening in. I had a chance today to go over some of the research that I published about Dwight David Eisenhower, the 34th President of the United States, and his background from Bukovina, Austria-Hungary. And it was a quite interesting show, I'm told. It's difficult for folks to grasp a handle on such a story, especially when everyone thought that Eisenhower was doing a patriotic deed when he notified us of the looming military-industrial complex. I think that was part of the Hegelian dialectic of who the man was and the role he played as a foreign agent inserted into the U.S. Army, ultimately into the presidency of the United States. If you haven't read the article, which is in two parts, I encourage you to go to my website, directlightproductions.com. Click on articles. When you get to the index page, you'll see the menu there. I highly recommend reading both parts. It is a lengthy piece. A friend told me that it prints out to about 24 pages. So it's not your typical internet posting, and yet I felt the detail and the photographic analysis was very important. Put those points in there. There's genealogical research. There were some references to documents that I found along the way, and of course, an obfuscated trail. You want to talk about throwing leaves over the breadcrumbs in the forest? Little Red Riding Hood would have gotten lost trying to follow the trail that was laid out in this one. So I encourage you to read with an open mind. Consider the things I'm saying, because I am revealing the truth. Even though it's a bit difficult to swallow, it is the truth. And I have no axe to grind other than getting to the truth. With that, tonight's guest is a talk show host. He has his own radio show called The Story Behind the Story. He's been a Monday night guest all this month on Evident Footprints, and he's been a frequent guest over the past few months. We've actually been collaborating in our research on a number of different stories to do with the American police force in Hardin, Montana, this swine flu pandemic ruse that's being played on the world, and some other intriguing stories. He's my good friend, Dr. A. Chu-Ott. Chu, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Don. I'm looking forward to reading that piece as well. I've discussed it with a number of people who have read it. And if I could, I'd just like to echo a question they gave to me. And I said, well, next time I talk to Don, and maybe this might not be the best place to ask you, but why not? They said, what does it matter? That's ancient history. And I said, well, I'll ask Don to say why it matters. I have my own ideas, Don, but I want to hear what you have to say about that.
Well, if it's ancient history, why were we lied to about it? Why do they have to cover up who Dwight D. Eisenhower was? Why are there conflicting statements from his own mouth as to where he was from? Why is he wearing an Austrian army uniform, posing as a soldier at Fort Sam Houston in San Antonio, Texas, when it's clear that it's a Photoshop job? It's manipulation of photography, and that's the only Army uniform at the time they could actually portray him in. This has everything to do with what's going on today. In fact, Austria is playing a very big role in a lot of the financial corruption that's going on. So for those that want to say, well, it has nothing to do with today, it has everything to do with today. You have exactly the same situation in the White House in Washington, D.C. right now. You have someone who can't even prove they were born on planet Earth, let alone produce a school transcript, a certificate of live birth, a driver's license, a passport, anything, any legitimate photo or any legitimate documentation is absolutely lacking. So it has everything to do with what's going on today and everything that's transpired over the last 150 years or more in this country.
I'm just amazed, Don, at the meteoric rise of this guy to the Allied Supreme Commander. It just seems like there was not. I don't know. Maybe you can correct me here, but what battlefield successes previous to that had he enjoyed? You know, what made him gave him the bona fides to receive this the Supreme Commander position, and then. Of course, ride that right into the Oval Office.
It's the bloodline.
Mm-hmm.
it's strictly the bloodline. You see, we are still, many of us, not all of us, but many of us are still under this spell of anybody can become the president of the United States. You have to work hard. You have to do well at school. This guy, they say, and this is fabricated. I mean, this is how ridiculous the story is. They say he graduated after 5 years attending the academy at West Point. It took him 5 years to graduate, and he graduated in the top 50% of his class. Where, you know, the top 50%, that means you're at 50%.
Yeah, Matt, you know? That's my point. There's nothing in his IQ, his performance at West Point, nothing that could really point to, you know, this man has an exceptional strategic, brilliant mind. I just don't see it other than the answer you gave. Well, it's genetic bloodlines, and there's a reason and agenda for this to happen. So,
yes. I found every step of the way the documents were fabricated. I even got a notice, and this is in the article. I mean, it's sort of tongue-in-cheek, but I captured the screen off of one of the names that I was following. Evidently, I wasn't supposed to see the passenger manifest, which may have revealed some damning information. There was a passenger record for a Frantz, F-R-A-N-T-Z, Eisenhower, and I had already been tracking that name. In fact, that's the name I came up with for the person that acted as a surrogate, bringing the illegitimate son of Franz Joseph I, the Emperor of Austria-Hungary, into the United States. And they set this up beginning in the 1800s. This was set up, and I'm convinced that it was set up with the aid of Theodore Roosevelt, after he left the presidency, for sure. There is a film that I put in the article. It's a little-known film. I've not seen anyone write about it, any journalist whatsoever, write about this trip that Roosevelt made to Austria in 1910. Yet he spent several days there with the emperor, and certainly that was enough time to set this thing up. The first record I have of Eisenhower actually setting foot on U.S. soil is September 27, 1924. Yet they tell us he went to West Point. He was born in Denison, Texas. But he told the INS people on that date, 1924, that he was born in Tyler, Texas. Why lie about it? Why lie? You see? Now, these are the significance of this and the pertinence of this is that these people have made laws that really should be repealed because they were illegal. The felonies were being committed left and right. by people holding high office. Why? Because their Illuminati bloodline put them in office? Excuse me, we still have a constitution today. I get really angry about this. I get upset about it because people are asking, well, what does it have to do with this and that? People aren't paying attention to what's going on today either.
Right on.
You know, so, and I don't mean, you know, these might be, you know, very close friends of yours that asked this question. I've heard it a million times already. And I know
They asked me to bring, I'm not sure if they're on the show tonight. I told them to come on, I would broach the subject with you because, you know, I can give my take, and that's basically what I told them, Don. I said, well, it's a parallel of a pattern. A pattern and a prophecy, if you will, okay, that it just subverts the entire constitutional process. And so if we focus on Barack Hussein Obama or Barry Sotero or you know, Earthling Test Tube, whatever, man in the White House, we have to show that there's a precedence that's happened before. And, you know, it kind of gives credence to the story and the truth about who this party crasher. I gotta tell you, there was a funny cartoon in our local newspaper, Don, which is, you know, strongly Republican, of course. Yeah, there was these party crashers were being grilled by the Secret Service, and in the next room, another Secret Service was investigating the party crashers called the Obamas because they weren't supposed to be there either. The way it was set up was just funny. But, you know, there's truth in that. I mean, if you have no legitimate invitation as far as your bona fide documentation of citizenship, you have no business coming to the party, okay? And again, people, when I discuss this on my radio show, and I have on times as a guest on other shows, I get a couple of emails that come and said, well, hey, it doesn't matter really, he's elected, he's our president, we need to stand behind him. I said, whoa, you're missing the point. It does matter if you follow the logic of the founding fathers. You see, there's a very important reason why the Founding Fathers placed that in the Constitution, that you have to be a natural-born citizen, because they knew, and truthfully so, there's a spiritual, a powerful spiritual bond to the land in which you're appointed to be the supreme commander of its armed forces and of, you know, the top office in the land. You have that spiritual connection, Don, to really govern wisely for the benefit of the people and the republic itself. If you trample on that bond, that spiritual bond, well, it's a great disservice to the people, and we're seeing this. I don't know if you happened to catch my show today, Don, but I interviewed Lyndon LaRouche's a man, again, Harley Schlanger was supposed to be on, but he, the last minute, we got notified that he had been robbed. I'm not sure whether he was mugged or just whether there was a burglary, but I wasn't clear, but he was in a personal emergency. He couldn't come on the show, so we had a fill-in, but the whole thing we dissected today on my show was this monstrosity passed on Christmas Eve, the supposed the Senate health care bill, okay? Holy mackerel, the unconstitutional dictatorial precepts of that monstrosity should never, never have even been put on paper, let alone debated and eventually passed by the Senate. Absolutely sets up the equivalent of the Nazi T4 death squads of euthanasia, again, on American soil. Again, there you go back to the Austrian/German connection of 1938. Kind of an amazing thing going on.
Yes. Now there is relevance to, you know, the Congress had to pass some kind of a declaration formalizing Obama's birth in Hawaii, formalizing John McCain's birth as an American citizen after this research came out that I did. You see, they still went ahead and did this anyway, full well knowing that I had reported the truth. I had discovered the truth. I had revealed the truth to people around the world, and they had the audacity to make these proclamations officially declaring Obama a citizen. Now, since when do they get off doing that? Isn't that a state issue? First of all, it's a federal issue that these guys can just get together behind closed doors and plot and deceive the public and just make anybody they want a citizen of this country. There were protocol that our parents fought and died for, and our grandparents in wars for freedom to prevent this kind of thing from happening. See, I take this very, very seriously. There are many people who have died fighting for a cause that they were led to believe was righteous and of God, but it's nothing more than organized crime. That's all it is.
And the evidence, of course, has now surfaced that Nancy Pelosi and the Democratic National Committee absolutely did not correctly vet and certify the citizenship issue way back when he was candidate Obama. And that's all come to life now. So, I mean, there's obviously some criminal things going on here, too, that should be investigated and should be prosecuted.
I think I brought that up 6 months ago regarding the Denver campaign and the nomination there in Denver. They struck the constitutional provision out of the nomination papers that were signed.
Mm-hmm.
So they're all aware of it. I witnessed a conference phone call to the Democratic National Committee where an acquaintance was asking to speak with Howard Dean, and he was told that Dean was busy. The secretary would handle the problem or answer whatever question, and he brought up the issue about Obama's lack of a birth certificate, lack of proper documentation, and the response of this woman was, oh, don't worry, we've taken care of that in court. That's a dead issue.
Really?
Oh, yeah. And then she hung up.
In court before the candidacy, or was this after the presidency?
No, this is during the primary.
Uh-huh.
This is during the primary this came out, okay?
Well, was that ever really taken care of in court?
No, was the stock answer that they gave.
Yeah.
Or maybe it implies that they bribed all the judges. So if it does go to court, you know, it gets quashed, which is basically what's happened to anybody that's filed a suit. They say, well, you don't have standing. Well, wait a minute. He doesn't have standing. He himself doesn't have standing. Think about that.
Now, your piece that you wrote, quite a few months ago now, concerning the so-called lawsuit there in California, is that ever going to come to fruition, or is it again just blowing in the wind there?
No, that's the misdirection and the diversion. Okay, and there's no doubt. Plenty of people have come out and said that Orly Tates is likely, you know, in bed with the Mossad. She's an Israeli agent. Her husband, I outed as a co-conspirator with Novartis and his Daylight Chemical Systems, the Descartes software used to map out all these genome sequences and computers using Oracle 8. You remember that?
Oh, absolutely. It was just a huge connection to my research as we were going. Because, ladies and gentlemen, you have to realize that to recreate these killer viruses of they uncovered in 1918, you need a very sophisticated computer program to do that. To first of all even map the genome structures, because there's literally millions and not tens of millions of possible genetic sequence connections to that. So to unravel that, to see that what caused the many millions of deaths in 1918 and what caused the virus to be so lethal, needed quite a sophisticated computer program to do that. And it goes back to the Oracle 8i, back to Orly Tate's husband. Now, how? Imagine this. This is not just a one in a million shot in a haystack. It can't.
I was going to ask you that. What are the odds? You know.
Oh my goodness.
The odds are 1 in 7 billion at least, right?
I would think.
And yet, I found it. It was just a hunch, you know, to look to see what the connection might be. That she's out there on the front lines filing these incompetent lawsuits. And I was suspicious because I had sent her photographs. She had asked me to send her photographs.
Really?
And I did, 3 times. And she never got them. Well, it doesn't surprise me. But I was able to post them in my article, and thousands and thousands of people have read that material. And you can't deny that those are phony photographs. They're Photoshop creations of the worst order.
Well, you know, I also don't want to burst an ego bubble here, Don, but there's people in cyberspace, as you are well aware, even in the alternative media markets, that are hell bent on destroying your reputation, and I can't imagine why, given your research. I mean, if you objectively follow the line of reasoning and look at the footnotes and the evidence, I mean, it should be self evident. But I don't know why there's personal attacks going on to the level they are. It's just. It's a sad situation.
Well, you know, there's the old adage that first they attack the message, okay? Uh-huh. In this case, they can't attack the message. So then they attack the messenger. I mean, I'm quite capable of dealing with it, you know. But no one wants to debate intelligently. Certainly, they don't want to go on mainstream media and talk about this, do they? They have to slander and stab you in the back and try to undermine every relationship you have business-wise or professionally with other talk show hosts, researchers, friends, relatives. It doesn't matter. They try it all. Mm-hmm. And you know what? You have to have thick skin, for one thing. Ken Adachi predicted that when I came out with the research on Obama. And in the process, I uncovered the corruption. And isn't it interesting that we do have real estate corruption, which I described when I investigated Obama's background. I found the corruption. I found who was doing it. And I said, Obama's mother is alive, and everybody told me I was crazy. Well, the Casper report on 4winds10.com yesterday alluded to the fact that Obama's mother is the one working, trying to break into the banking codes of the prosperity funds, the Nasara funds. So I was right. She's alive. Or they're reading my research. Okay? I was right. But you see, I'm reporting the facts as they add up.
And it now, which mother are we talking about? Not the Dunham.
Well, I say mother. I mean, obviously, we're mincing words here. We're dealing with semantics because we're talking about the surrogate agent, Stanley Ann Dunham.
Right. Okay. That's who we're talking to. Not the test tube baby.
No. Not Cleopatra. No.
Woo, that's a long stretch there. Can you walk like an Egyptian?
Yes, but why the fascination? Isn't it interesting? He's a Rockefeller boy. He's a Rockefeller puppet. And David Rockefeller has had this lifelong obsession with things of Egypt, and has spent a fortune on excavations there. And of course, he's probably picked up a lot of artifacts that that he's secretly holding. They faked Michael Rockefeller's death. I didn't fake it. I certainly noticed that it was fake, though. Again, fake photographs, fake stories, impossible stories. And Eisenhower's really is pathetic, to tell you the truth. What they did is they really masked the bloodline. They really hid it well, but they didn't hide it completely. It's impossible to do that, especially when somebody has intuition. Mm-hmm. Now, is it a coincidence that I've proven this with George H.W. Bush, the sheriffs? I've proven it with McCain, a.k.a. McCann, and the whole line. And in that case, I can tie them to Teddy Roosevelt just like I can Eisenhower. They were cut from the same cloth. Two associated rulers, world rulers, an emperor in Austria-Hungary, and a king of England, Edward VII. And they were both doing the same things, and they used Teddy Roosevelt to pull it off and his shipping lines. No doubt about it. Absolutely no doubt about it whatsoever.
Uh-huh.
So it can be a stress for somebody, but you see, that's what they're counting on. You tell me, you know, those people out there, those doubting Thomases, you tell me how they pulled this off then. Because I can tell you, a man born in Denison, Texas, doesn't tell somebody he was born in Tyler, Texas. And the record is there at Ellis Island. You can go see it for yourself. I didn't make the statement. He did. See?
Yep, exactly. And then you go, on a lighter note, I think President Eisenhower was the model for the Looney Tunes figure, Elmer Fudd. I don't know. What do you think?
You're probably right.
No, it's an amazing, amazing thing that we get this individual from the Czech Republic, and you've shown where they originated from and come over. But again, why were they grooming this guy to do this? I mean, is that the deeper part of the story? Is it?
Well, he's a figurehead. Presidents are figureheads, okay? Uh-huh. But he certainly passed a lot of laws. Now, there were some laws that he passed around 1954. These were the secret things going on with Majestic 12 and the alien encounters going on, the secret meeting.
That's where I was hoping you'd go with this, because, you know, I'm reviewing my correspondence and that with the file. Yeah, this is the time of year I kind of do a little house cleaning of my files, you know what I mean?
Yes.
And I pulled up Behold the Pale Horse file when I did interviews with Bill Cooper, and I'm not sure if he ever wrote this down, but it was surely part of my notes and part of an interview I did with Bill Cooper, and he claimed that, as you just said, and around the 50s, there were overtures first made to Truman right after the nuclear bomb went off in Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and basically the final decision was deferred until the Eisenhower administration, and it basically went like this, in exchange for completely abandoning the nuclear capabilities, the Intergalactic Federation, so to speak, would trade exceptional technologies of peace, but there was most definitely in the Eisenhower camp a deferment not to the Galactic Federation, but to the overlords of the reptilians that had already been working behind the scenes for millennia. And that's basically what Cooper told me. And he said, I've got complete, total documentation of that fact, though he never did forward them to me. This was in 2001 when we had much of these discussions. And of course, he was whacked and murdered before he could give much of this information out. But there, you know, a lot of this is still in his book, "To Hold the Pale Horse," as well. So I just, you know, I think that's one of the reasons why Eisenhower was placed in that position. But I could be wrong.
No, I think you're quite right. In fact, would you be surprised to know? And this is in the article. It's in part two of the article. The article, by the way, is called "Teenage Mutant Ninja Eisenhower."
Heroes in the Half-Baked Shell, right?
The Franz Joseph I, the emperor, okay? He was an autocratic ruler, mind you, okay? So you could say, in a way, he was his own Saddam Hussein, okay? A total autocrat. His personal coat of arms was a two-headed dragon, a winged dragon.
Really?
Oh, yes. It's in the article.
Holy mackerel.
Okay. Now, those are called Dracos when you're talking about reptilians. Although, you know, this looks more like the representations that you see in American art.
And this was the Eisenhower coat of arms?
No, this is Franz Joseph I's coat of arms, the emperor of Austria-Hungary.
Okay, right, okay.
Now, by the way, where Eisenhower is from, where I tracked him down, he is from Bukovina. Remember on Drew Rain's show a couple of weeks ago, I came out with that information? That was after about an hour of research.
Uh-huh.
I said, I will get to the bottom of this, but I know I'm right. And certainly I was. He's wearing, in these photographs, purported to be taken at Fort Sam Houston or St. Louis College in San Antonio while he was stationed there. They claim he was the football coach at this college, which is absurd. But nonetheless, on his first assignment, he's wearing an Austrian army uniform. The only photographs we have of him during that time period, 1916, he's wearing a 1916 Austrian Army uniform. Mm. And I compared it to Harry Truman's version of the U.S. Army uniform. They're quite different.
Wow. So, I mean, this was just at the tail end of the Great War then, the conclusion of World War One with...
He wasn't even here at that time. He was over there fighting in World War One for Bukovina, you see? Now, the significance of that is that Bukovina, Hungary, was made up of one portion of the Ukraine and a portion of Romania as well. Those are the two areas that have been hit with the swine flu or the biological spraying that's going on there.
Mm.
Isn't that interesting how that parallels something that was happening during World War One and prior to World War One, because this was part of the Prussian War, you see, and Franz Joseph didn't fare very well in that war. All right, Drew, we can come back to this. We've got a caller on the line, Mark in Washington. Welcome to Evident Footprints. Comment or question for Dr. H. Huat. Hello? Well, I'm not hearing Mark from Washington. I don't know if you are true.
Hello? Can you hear me?
Okay, now we can hear you.
Can you hear me?
Welcome to the show. Yes, comment or question for Dr. Rott?
Well, I kind of have a comment, you guys, but then I was hoping that you could might be able to elaborate on a story that I heard. Because I think you might know this. I just want to see if confirm it, if you've ever heard anything like this. In 1954, Eisenhower met down in one of those Air Force bases in Southern California. I believe it might be Andrews or
Andrews.
One of them. And they met with the reptilian race, and they brought down four spaceships. And at that particular, what they were after is that's when the alien abductions were, they wanted to be able to have the ability to abduct human beings. So the Joint Chiefs of Staff, you know, Eisenhower was a little bit, you know, standoffish about doing it, I guess. But then the Joint Chiefs were saying that, man, you know, look at the technology we're getting here. Think of what we'll have over the Russians, you know. But they wanted to have this agreement, and they wanted it signed. So they got it from the Vatican and from the United States and I believe from England, and they got all this paperwork signed so they could do abductions. And in return, they were to give, you know, their light and sound technology with, you know, their UFOs. And I believe this is how Black Ops got started. They agreed to help them build their first couple of underground bases. And I think then what happened is they realized they couldn't go to the American people. They just signed an agreement to let the reptilians, you know, do abductions on planet Earth. So that's when they used Joseph Kennedy, because he was the master smuggler, and they got Aristotle and Nassus involved because he had all the boats, and that's when the heroin thing started, and that's how Black Ops was built on the drug trade. And that's kind of in a nutshell that I heard this story, and I was wondering if you could comment on any of that.
True. Do you want to take that question?
Well, yeah, that's very much the storyline that Bill Cooper related to me. If my memory banks serve me correctly, he did say that he had evidence through his intelligence sources that indeed Eisenhower went to a base in California. Andrews, I believe, was the base, and there had a come to Jesus meeting with the reptilians. They said, "Well, look, we've got this other group that wants us to abandon the nuclear proliferation that's ongoing, the Cold War that's now going full speed, and versus, you know, if you're going to stick with you guys, the reptilians, you've got to stop these abductions. Too many people are being experimented on, and basically we want them stopped." And again, do I have any personal knowledge about that actually happening? No, it's secondhand information for me at best. But it makes sense and it's logical to me.
Yeah, I might comment on the meetings in 1954. Those meetings were preceded by this press notice that Eisenhower was stopping off in Palm Springs to go see a dentist.
Mm.
All right, that's what they fed the mainstream media, and of course, all the people heard this, and that was his explanation for being elsewhere. The fact that what I've discovered through my research shows me that he was an agent for the reptilians. Basically, if you know, this is really going out on a limb, but I can tell you on the basis of what I found. How does a world ruler stay in power for 68 years? He'd have to start very young. He'd have to be protected. He'd have to have a lot of clout. And certainly Austria happens to be the place where a lot of this genetic research was going on, too, true.
Yes.
In fact, the type of research that created Barack Obama was done right there in Vienna. You know, this is for some people a stretch, but this topic always is the culmination of all the other topics that we research, isn't it? It always comes to this in the end.
Well, yeah.
One more.
Go ahead.
Go ahead, Mark.
Just one question pertaining to the dentist appointment that he had. Was that somewhere in February of 1954 that he had this appointment, and was that in the neighborhood of this Air Force base or something? Or is there any proof, knowledge that he made a trip to this Air Force
actually,
base?
Actually, I think the base was Holloman Air Force Base.
Oh.
Okay. wasn't Andrews.
Yeah, I wasn't sure of the name.
Yeah, Holloman.
Holloman, okay.
Yeah, Holloman Air Force Base. And, of course, this was written up in many of the, you know, semi-secret Majestic 12 documents. Some which were released were redacted like crazy. I mean, it was page after page of blacked out documents. Somebody just went crazy with a felt pen and blacked them out.
Oh, yeah, I've seen those. Yeah, yeah, amazing. What are they hiding there? So are you saying that during that time, that period of time in 54, that's when they may have said, hey, you've got to stop doing the alien abductions? But I'm sure that, you know, listening to Whitley Strieber's account, they've been going on ever since then. I don't know how much they are going on today, but
yeah, the claims that these programs stopped are to appease people who are getting too close to the truth, telling us, oh yeah, well, this stopped, they don't do that anymore, just like they don't remote view anymore, or SRI has nothing to do with mind control. If you knew that they got just a few years ago, in fact, when I was tracking real estate transactions through Maricopa County in Arizona, it was taking me up to Michigan, and when I tracked down the name of a guy who was at a piece of property he wasn't even supposed to be in, I found this guy was right in line after SRI, Stanford Research Institute, to get money to tear down buildings at abandoned bases. And the entry right before his entry, and it, you know, this guy was getting a big chunk of money, was for SRI on doing biological research. But, you know, we're talking about microbiology, things to spray on the populace. No doubt about it. So the doing one kind of research leads you into other areas that sort of, you know, intersect all the time, not just occasionally. Go ahead. True, you want to say something?
Well, Mark's comment.
Mark? Okay.
I just had one more comment to say about these alien abductions. I met a girl in probably about the mid-90s. And up here in Washington State, between Seattle and Tacoma. And this girl claimed that she had been abducted many times by these little gray aliens. And she showed me her body. And I tell you what, they were very, very crude in how they did their incisions and everything. It just grossed me out. She showed them to me, and I had no reason to disbelieve her. She was really, she wasn't playing, you know, she was a perfectly normal girl, but yet she was just a little off, you know, in her, like she didn't have a full deck going on.
Well, she is probably mind controlled and probably implanted as well. Not to mention, you know, in some kind of a shock. This is happening more and more frequently. We're hearing about people who are recalling these events. And, you know, when we hear about abductions, what people have to understand is you're not always going to see a craft come down out of the sky, land, beam you up, and take you off to some other part of the universe. Often they're in underground bases. And they're surfacing and they're using many of these women as breeders because they have a definite genetic problem with their females and in producing. In fact, you don't see many reptilian females around. The ones that are on the surface are hybrids. They're a combination of human and reptilian. I just want to throw that out there because there were a lot of people talking about the abductions like it only happens to people who are cattle ranchers or, you know.
Yeah. It doesn't seem like they're still going on, are they?
Oh, yes, they are. They're going on, yes. In fact, Ken Adachi is doing some serious research in that area, and as well as I am, and some other people we know. It's happening. And we've got photographs that will blow your mind. We've got video that will blow your mind. So it's really happening. You know, these things.
I've seen quite a few UFOs in my lifetime. The first time was in 77. That was my first one. But the most spectacular one I've ever seen was in 99. I went over to... it's a place called the Columbia Gorge here in Washington, and they have a big music venue there called the Gorge at George.
Uh-huh.
You're familiar with that. And I went to a Santana concert. I didn't stay there in George. I went up to a place called Crescent Bar, which is about 30 miles north. And when you go, you have to drop all the way down. It's like being in the Grand Canyon there. These canyonland walls between this river has carved this out. They're like 250 feet, down to the river. And there's this really nice little resort down there. And when we came back, I chose to camp. I was camping with my girlfriend at the time on the river. And my buddies and them, they got a condo there. To make a long story short, so we got back, and it was about 3:45 in the morning when we all decided to go to sleep. And so my girlfriend and I walked down to the, you know, to our tent, and I said, hey, let's walk down to the river and, put our feet in the water or something before we go to bed. And we were standing there pitch black out, and all of a sudden, this white orb popped on, and it had to have been sitting, I'd say, about an eighth of a mile from me, and it was down probably about 100 feet off the ground, because I know how far the canyonland walls are there. And they knew we were there, and it was the most beautiful, pure white light, it was like energy. And then they'd shut it off, and then you'd see like a little flicker, a little red flicker, almost like a lighter or something, a flame. And then you'd see the flame move a little bit, and then pop the light, the whole thing would become illuminated again. They did that about 4 or 5 times. I tell you, the hair stood up on every part of my body. I dropped to my knees in the sand, and it was quite an experience.
What's that? Is this the habit?
I believe those were the good guys.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Drew. You wanted to say something?
Good guys.
Yeah. Was this? You say this was the Grand Canyon and the Havasupai Reservation?
Well, it's like the Grand Canyon, but it's up here in Washington. It's
called the Columbia Gorge. Okay. Okay.
Yeah, it's like the Grand Canyon, because they're just these rock walls. They're 200 feet high, at least.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Mark, I want to thank you for the call. I got to let you go here because we got to wrap up the show pretty soon here. But thanks for the call, and do call in again.
Yeah, thanks,
Mark. Appreciate you guys. Thank you.
Right.
Okay, Happy New Year to you.
That happens quite a bit in these these canyon gorges. Whether it's the water or just where the water goes. Yeah, if you know what I'm talking about, underground,
mm-hmm.
That brings these up. I've had a number of people that have traveled into the Grand Canyon at the Havasupai Reservation and witnessed much the same thing. In fact, there were a series of stories about this canyon that was this sub-canyon cave that was found at the Havasupai Reservation boundaries at the bottom of the Grand Canyon that was full of Egyptian artifacts, Egyptian columns and pyramids, and basically the Egyptian city at the bottom of the Grand Canyon. That's just an amazingly true story.
Oh, I think you're just crazy.
No. I think it was no less than National Geographic originally reported something about that. The expedition to photograph and document all this was squashed by the powers that be in the government for some reason. You know what I'm talking about? But mm-hmm. going back again to the main subject matter, Don, 1954, yeah, there were some very, very pivotal things happening worldwide, on the worldwide stage, that President Eisenhower was very much in the mix on. And I would just like to also comment theoretically that 1952 to 54, something very strange happened in the United States as far as agriculture production is concerned. The Secretary of Agriculture at the time was eventually became the Mormon church prophet, a man named Ezra Taft Benson, following the directives of the powers that be behind the throne of Eisenhower. The Department of Agriculture basically outlawed the production and distribution of millet as the staple, you know, food base, and basically the policies directed the American farmers to be paid to raise grain instead of millet. Now, why is that important, ladies and gentlemen? You've got to realize that at that point in time, when we began as a nation to not consume millet in major quantities, but instead replaced millet with corn and gluten-rich grains, that we became basically subject to all these soft tissue cancers. Millet, ladies and gentlemen, is naturally high in something called B17 or nitrilicide, subject of a whole other show perhaps, but let me just tell you that if you had millet as your staple instead of grain or corn, you basically have it's Mother Nature's anti-cancer agent. I just find it really strange that here we have the same time frame, Operation Paperclip under Eisenhower. We have these Nazi Gestapo scientists and just all around evil people being basically folded into mainstream American and Western high-level medical associations, and not the least of which is the American Cancer Society. Here we have, as evidenced by the book Dr. Mary's Monkey by Edward Haslam, the documentation of the covert research labs in the 50s were mutating viruses and producing these soft tissue cancers. These viruses were somehow got into the vaccine supply of polio. And voila, we suddenly have in the 60s and 70s a massive now outbreak of cancer, and Tricky Dick Nixon donates billions of taxpayer dollars to the war on cancer, and yet we really still have that as a problem, where the latest statistics are, you know, as many as half, one out of two people will have a soft tissue cancer problem in America. What is this all about, Don? It goes back again to that, the Eisenhower administration and the changing of our basic food structure itself, and the elimination of millet as a primary basic building block nutrient. Just parenthetical.
Yes. Well, again, it has everything to do with today, doesn't it? When you go down the rabbit hole as deeply as I did, you see there is a reason for the lies, okay? And getting to the reason, obviously, is connected to who's behind all of this. Who would have had designs to control the United States remotely, you know, as if they had a handheld remote in their hand? What better way to do it than put somebody from your bloodline into the government? First, via the military. I mean, this went on for two world wars. Mm-hmm. He was involved in the First World War there in Bukovina, Austria-Hungary. No doubt about it. Why would he be wearing an Austrian uniform? I'd like somebody to answer that question. It certainly wasn't on Halloween. It was supposed to have been July 1st. By the way, you may find this interesting in the closing moments here. He got married in Denver and had a wedding picture taken the same day at St. Louis College in San Antonio, Texas, wearing an Austrian military uniform.
What?
Oh,
it was an Austrian military uniform to their wedding.
Well, he did, according to the photographs. But you see, I checked. They said that a Reverend Williamson, the pastor at the Central Presbyterian Church in Denver, performed the marriage at the Dowd House. That's Mamie Eisenhower's parents' house at 750 Lafayette Street in Denver. Well, it so happens that W.E. Williamson was a pastor at the Central Presbyterian Church, but it was in Petersburg, Illinois, from 1894 to 1895. That was 21 years before their alleged marriage in Denver. So that was a lie, too. They're even lying about the ceremony itself.
Wow.
And lying about the minister that brought God's word into their marriage.
Well, how does Mamie fit into this? Have you checked her bloodline?
Okay. Well, I debunk the story about Ida Stover, who is the alleged mother of Dwight Eisenhower. It's another ruse. It's like the Dunhams and Obama. Okay. There was no woman named Ida Stover. But what's interesting is I located a name that I knew was Eisenhower intuitively and logically from where my research took me. Adolf Eisenhower was his name.
Huh.
Adolf Eisenhower. You better believe they had to make it very different from Adolf, because we had a guy coming up soon, also from Austria, Adolf Hitler. He was coming down the pike a little bit later, in between the two world wars. And he was already on the scene as early as 1918 anyway. So they probably even knew each other, I would guess. Interestingly, Adolf Eisenhower married a woman named Ida Koch. What are the odds of him marrying an Ida and having the guy that I can associate to the Dwight David Eisenhower character having a mother named Ida? Of course, that was just a cover story. That was the Hegelian dialectic. So Mamie Eisenhower's real name was Ida Koch. And they were married in Austria-Hungary, in Bukovina.
Wow.
You'll find it fascinating.
A lot of information there, Don.
Sure is. Well, true, we got to call it a night here. You know, we're in that holiday week.
Yes,
where,
we are.
People have things to do, places to go, things to see, people to talk to, and it's been a pleasure having you on the show. I had no idea what we were going to talk about.
Yeah, well, I just wanted to clarify some things that were posed to me. You did a very, very good job. I knew you would. But, yeah, I basically said the same thing to these individuals, Don. And again, like we said, it parallels so much what Bill Cooper brought out during that time frame. And it's just incredible that the bloodlines have to do that, and the smokescreen and the hypocrisy is what bothers me the most.
Yeah, well, you have to ask yourself the question: where is there a threat to the truth? Okay, if the truth reveals an evil plan to rule the world, secretly rule the world, and murder billions of people, certainly we have an obligation as researchers and journalists and talk show hosts to bring that information to the public.
Very much
and
so.
They can do with it what they choose. But certainly those that are hell-bent on destroying the reputations of people that do that have nothing better to do themselves. You know,
yeah, part of their job description, I guess. Thank you so much for all the work you do and for the discussion tonight. It's been enlightening to me, and hopefully the same for the listeners. God bless you, and Happy New Year, Don.
Well, Happy New Year to you, and I look forward to having you on next month. So you and I have to get together and see if that we can make that possible.
Sounds good.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, our guest tonight is Dr. A. True Ott. And you want to tune in on Monday through Friday on republicbroadcasting.org. Listen to his show, The Story Behind the Story. It was a good one today. I did hear it, by the way. special thanks to Wind Talkers Radio Network and blogtalkradio.com for carrying the show tonight. Also, special thanks to bbsradio.com for making Evident Footprints possible. Tonight we had Don Newsom on the sound. Great job, Don. And special thanks to our caller, Mark, in Washington for his comments and questions. And join us again tomorrow night for another show. In the meantime, I wish everyone a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.